Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank CashFly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. CashFly. This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte, episode 50, for June 14th, 2008. Dr. Mike of Pediacast. Jumping Monkeys is proudly brought to you by Audible.com for your free audiobook. Some great kids' books, too. Visit audible.com/monkeys. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations.
It's time for Yumpin' Monkeys! Yumpin' Monkeys, ladies
yumpin
and gentlemen.
Monkeys.
Metal Maroney.
Metal Mouth Maroney.
Metal Mouth Maroney.
Back in 1983.
Is that what they called you? Have I now done a deep damage to your psyche?
No, I did have braces, but no one really ever called me Metal Mouth. No. It was the era of being cool with braces.
Everybody has braces now. I mean, there's nothing unusual about having braces.
Yeah.
I didn't have braces when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I think it was a little more unusual. I'm an older guy, so I'm an older fella. I'm an old gent. But I think it was less common back then.
Our dentist told us we would need to start saving for braces. Annabella got two teeth pulled yesterday because the other two came in and
That happens. Yeah. And they're coming in wrong, and so see, I think we're much more proactive about smiles these days.
We are,
yeah,
yes.
It's all about the smile.
Yeah.
Got to have a great smile.
It's true. So today, speaking of smiling, we're going to talk to Dr. Mike.
Yay, Dr. Mike.
Pediacast. Dr. Mike is a board-certified pediatrician.
But it doesn't mean you'll be bored.
And he does a podcast called Pediacast, very popular podcast. I've had a few people email me and say, why don't you have Dr. Mike on? So we're having Dr. Mike on. He actually emailed me. We've been trying to get him on for a long time, but he, you know, sees patients and that kind of thing.
Oh, he's got a job. So this Pediacast is for parents?
Yes, it's a podcast for parents. Okay. He talks about all kinds of medical issues for kids, but we're going to talk today to Dr. Mike about vaccines.
I was feeling pretty good when I said, oh, it's our 50th podcast.
Mm-hmm. It is our 50th
until
podcast.
Until I found out that it's Pediacast's
150th?
129th.
Well, TWiT, you're on like 145, aren't you, or something like that? 152?
Yeah, we're up there, but still, that's 126 podcasts they've done, Pediacast.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And that's at pediascribe.com and also pediacast.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to talk to Dr. Mike about vaccines, whether they're safe, you know, the link between vaccines and autism, all kinds of
that's
things.
That's a hot topic.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to him later on in the show, hopefully pretty soon. Because I think he's going to be, we're going to get to him pretty soon.
What should we talk about first?
Last week, two weeks ago, we talked to Jamie from the Girl Scouts, and we were talking about girls in IT careers, girls in science, and how why they're, you know, not. You remember talking about that? How
yes.
girls are, you know, even though they're good at math.
And, yes.
I heard and read an interesting article recently. It was in the Boston Globe. I first heard about it in NPR. And they say it's because women, now this might sound like sexist, but women often don't prefer those kinds of jobs. That they did some studies and they said that in countries where women are most equal with men, that's where the discrepancy between men and women in IT careers and science and high tech careers is biggest.
So it's almost sexist of us to assume that what's going on is that they're not allowed in. They're making a choice.
Right. And I think, I mean, numbers can prove anything, right?
Right.
So,
But that's a good thing to kind of keep an open mind about.
Right. And they say, you know, one other thing that I read was that women who are really good at math are often also really good at verbal skills. And so they often go into those directions instead, lawyer. And women who are good at science will often choose to go into like medicine
right.
instead. A lot of the IT
they
careers,
want to do more social things.
Yeah, and that also sounds sexist. We're not talking about all men.
Social
right. Men would often, many men would often prefer to just work alone with a computer where women would like.
God
so
knows
I thought
I
that
would.
Was really interesting.
I mean, I basically lock myself up in this room. 24 hours a day.
So the article in the Boston Globe was called The Freedom to Say No. And it was, I thought it was really interesting, this, all this research, that in countries where women are not given that much of a choice, yeah, then those are the countries where there is, where Philippines, Thailand, Russia, those people and women in high-tech careers are often as high as 30 to 35% versus 5% in Canada, Japan, and Germany.
Hey, look who's on here.
Oh, are we, is Dr. Mike
here? Dr. Mike is here. Hello, Dr. Mike.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. And hey, is there any way you could send us video so we could see Dr. Mike's mug?
You know, I wish I could, but my camera's down.
Oh, sorry. Man. Well, that's all right. We'll just have to imagine what you look like.
Or we'll have you on again when your camera's working.
That's right. That's right.
I think it's a MacGuffin. I don't think he wants anybody to see what Dr. Mike actually looks like.
Dr. Mike is actually like Doogie Howser. He's actually 13.
Yeah, that's right. It's a big mystery. You would be very disappointed.
Oh, all right.
Oh, no.
Well, it's great to talk to you. And congratulations on 126 shows. That's amazing, Dr. Mike.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you. As you know, it's a lot of work, but I love doing it. So
tell us a little bit about PediaCast for those who haven't subscribed yet.
Oh, sure. Well, one of my biggest frustrations as a pediatrician is not having enough time to go through education kind of stuff. So I guess when I found out about podcasting, I thought, well, what a great opportunity to basically to provide a forum for parents to get their questions answered in an environment where there's not a big rush, because even in my own office practice, it's so busy. And, you know, if I tried to take the time to explain everything, I'd see 5 patients in a day. So, I guess it gives me a chance to answer parents' questions.
So do you also email with the parents of patients or
no, but you know, it's a pretty busy practice.
Yeah.
And, I guess when I'm not seeing patients or officially doing phone messages and that sort of thing, I just don't know. I guess it's my private time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And your family time. You have how many kids do you have?
Two kids.
Yeah.
11-year-old son and a 13-year-old daughter, who will soon be 14, going on about 25.
So I'm thinking, Dr. Mike, that you pretty much do this podcast about 3-4 in the morning most of the time. Is that right?
No. Usually it ends up being sometime in the evening. And right now I've just been doing one a week. So there was a time last summer when I was cranking them out, but I don't know. I mean, one a week is really a good number.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And we not only answer questions, we also go through pediatric news and, we call it news parents can use. And it's just information in the pediatric realm that I think parents would be interested in. And then we also do interviews with pediatric specialists and parenting experts.
Hmm. So I imagine there's a lot of interest. I mean, this is a very hot topic right now. In fact, there are a couple of hot button issues that we thought we'd talk to you about.
Sure. Throw my way. I'm used to it.
Oh, I bet you are. First thing, I'm sure parents come in and say to inoculate or not to inoculate.
So what?
I
was just going to ask, do you think parents should be concerned about vaccinating their kids?
No.
Every doctor I ask says no. This must be, I mean, why is it? Why? And then I don't understand. Why is there this kind of widespread belief that somehow inoculations are dangerous? And it is. It's getting more widespread all the time.
I think it's because of the internet. I mean, there is a chance for there to be information out there that parents can read. And it typically, is very emotional. There are parents who believe this. It's a very heartfelt argument. And so it's easy to get sort of drawn into it. But there's no scientific basis to suggest that vaccines are dangerous to the vast majority of kids. Now, of course, there are exceptions to that. I mean, kids with underlying immune disorders. I mean, there are always going to be exceptions, but right, by and large, there's no scientific evidence to suggest that they aren't safe.
Well, and there's a lot of scientific evidence to suggest that not getting vaccines is actually very dangerous, isn't it?
Oh, right. And that, you know, that's another thing. A lot of parents today don't remember, in fact, including myself. I mean, I'm not that old. I mean, I don't remember polio as being, you know, a big widespread thing.
Right.
I remember chicken pox. There are actually parents out there now who don't remember chicken pox.
Or scarlet fever or measles or mumps or all the other childhood diseases that when I was a kid, everybody had them. Everybody went through them. I went through them all. And I think it's very cool. We fully inoculated our daughter. Even recently, there are inoculations now against hepatitis, against warts. I mean, they've even extended beyond the childhood diseases now. And you know, we're believers in inoculation. There is there's always a risk, right?
Well, there's always a risk. Well, first, I have to correct one thing, because if I don't, I will get email about this.
Okay.
Trust me. Scarlet fever. There is not a vaccine for scarlet fever.
But you don't hear about it anymore.
No, we do. We see scarlet fever quite a bit. Okay. Scarlet fever is just a strep throat with a fever and a rash.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. It's not. Right. Rheumatic fever is the dangerous one.
Yes.
And we don't see that very often because we treat strep throat. But anyway, I'm sorry. If I didn't correct that, I would have
Thank you. You've learned the lesson of not letting anything go. Most childhood illnesses are now, many childhood illnesses now are you can inoculate against.
Yes, yeah, and you were saying that they aren't without risk, and I mean there is risk. There's risk when you poke someone with a needle that you can introduce infection into the skin. There's risk if someone has an immune deficiency that they could contract the disease that you're injecting them with if it's a live viral illness. You know, for example, measles. But you know, again, I can count. I can't even count on one hand the number of times you know that I've seen a kid, you know, get the disease that you're trying to protect them from.
Right.
I never seen it.
Yeah.
With polio, when there was the oral vaccine, there were a handful of kids that would get a natural polio disease. I mean, they would actually get polio from the vaccine, and that's why they switched to the injectable polio, because there's no chance that you can get it with that one.
I should correct myself. It's not warts. It was the human papilloma virus that she got a vaccination. Is that controversial at all?
Well, it is. First, let me say you are correct, because that group of viruses do cause warts. The particular strains of the virus that are in that vaccine can cause genital warts, and then that's what causes cervical dysplasia, and then that can lead to cervical cancer. So, I mean, you are right that there is sort of a vaccine for warts, but it's genital warts.
Right. It's papilloma,
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's controversial because you give it to kids often at a young age before their parents hope that they're sexually active, right?
Exactly. And so it becomes controversial, especially in religious communities, like, well, we're going to teach our kids to abstain until they're married. But, of course, you can't guarantee that that person's partner had the same beliefs or did that. So they could still be exposed even if they wait until marriage. And also, the immune response in teenagers is better than it is in adult women. So if you wait until a woman's in her 20s or 30s to get that vaccine, it's not going to work as well as if you give it to a 12 or 13-year-old.
We do everything our doctor says.
I should say that my kids are all fully vaccinated, but just to play the devil's advocate here, isn't part of the problem that the body that's in charge of regulating vaccines is the same group that's also in charge of promoting vaccines?
No, you know, I don't think so, because when in the past, whenever there has been issues, they've been immediately addressed. And so, for instance, when we discovered that the polio vaccine, the oral one, actually was causing more polio than it was preventing, we stopped using it. There was a time when this was about 10 years ago when the first rotavirus vaccine came out, and it was shown that there was a statistically significant association between the vaccine and a type of bowel obstruction called intussusception. And as soon as that was shown and discovered, it was pulled off the market, and we stopped giving it. So I think if there is valid research out there to show something is dangerous or not safe, we do make adjustments and changes. Another example is the old DTP vaccine, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis. It had a whole cell pertussis that was just a killed bacteria in it, and it was found that there were some cellular components inside the pertussis that was causing really high fevers and seizures in kids. And so what did they do? They came out with the DTAP, or acellular pertussis, which instead of being the whole dead, killed bacteria, it's just proteins on the outside of the bacteria, you know, that you make antibodies against. So, and then we don't see the high fevers and seizures like we used to with the old DTP. Yeah. So I think when we show scientifically that there is a problem, adjustments are made. There,
but that's an interesting point, because my sister-in-law, Jennifer's sister, must have heard about the problems with the earlier DTP, because she didn't get her kids vaccinated. They got pertussis, whooping cough, and it's a nasty thing. You do not want to get whooping cough. And and so the side effect of not getting the vaccine was far worse than the potential side effect for getting the vaccine, especially since she was working off old information.
Mm-hmm. Right, which the internet's full of.
Right, mm-hmm. You can't. What sites do you recommend people go to?
Well, pediacast.org.
That's a good start.
WebMD is very respectable. The American Academy of Pediatrics, they have all sorts of things for parents on that site. Dr. Green is also a good site with lots of useful, trustworthy information.
So Dr. I guess that's Green. I don't know Dr. Green.
Yeah, drgreen.com. I think it's with an E on the end of Green, I think.
And I've used WebMD for a long time. I think WebMD is a great...
Great everything system. There, you know, the panels look over the articles and make sure it's written well. Yeah, exactly. Right.
So what's a good place for online for parents to get recommended vaccine schedules?
Oh, well, definitely the most up-to-date is going to be the CDC. And if you just go to their cdc.gov, they have all the recommended, the schedule there that's, completely up to date. And you can find a link to it right on their homepage. And the American Academy of Pediatrics, too. It's kind of funny because they're two separate organizations that recommend vaccines. One is through the CDC and the other is the American Academy of Pediatrics, their committee on vaccines. And they don't always agree with one another, but usually when one makes a change, the other comes around eventually. But so in our practice, we usually follow what the latest recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics is. But sometimes the CDC will come out with something or a change and then kind of wait to see what the AAP is going to do. And usually they follow suit pretty quickly.
Well, do you think those changes are part of what scares parents? I mean, if they're changing, why did they change it? You know, my 5-year-old got these certain vaccines and my 1-year-old should get different ones.
Yeah, well, usually the changes come about because we're starting to see disease pop, you know, sort of break through. So, you know, that extra doses are needed. I mean, that's usually what happens. And as vaccines, I mean, you don't really know in a big population how many of the vaccines you're going to need until you've used it for a while. And you can start to see, you know, for the chickenpox vaccine, for instance, we knew that it would work for about 5 to 6 years when we started giving it because it had been used in Japan before it was used in the United States. But then once kids got to be out, you know, 10 to 15 years old, we started to see more and more breakthrough infections. And so the recommendation came out to add a booster dose. And we knew that might happen. You know, even back, I remember telling parents, well, just keep your eyes to the news, because if it gets to the point where we have to give a booster dose, you know, you're going to hear all about it in the news and you know that you have to get that done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, chickenpox is an interesting thing, because, I mean, I think a lot of parents my age are just like, I got the chickenpox. It wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, it didn't kill me. Like, I'm still here. Yeah.
Why do you suggest that the parents give the chickenpox?
You know, when the chickenpox vaccine came out, probably the first 5 years or so before it really caught on to be giving routinely, it was actually the number one cause of vaccine preventable death in the United States. So more kids died from chickenpox complications than any other vaccine-preventable disease there for a while. I don't think that's true anymore because it's really caught on. You know, all I can say is just because most people's experience with chickenpox is that it's not a big deal, it is for some kids. And I remember when I was a resident training in pediatrics, there was always, at least, and again, it was the very early days of the chickenpox shot, but there was always at least one kid in the intensive care unit with a complication from chickenpox. I mean, you can get hepatitis, You can get encephalitis, swelling of the brain. You can get a terrible thing called pneumonitis, which it's like pneumonia, but instead of inflammation in the airways, it's actually the covering of the lungs that becomes inflamed. And then you get you can get constriction of the lungs, and you end up needing to be on a ventilator for that. And I remember one mom in particular who she had taken her child to a party to intentionally expose them to chickenpox, and the kid ended up getting chickenpox and ended up in the intensive care unit. I mean, now you can imagine the guilt,
she must
you know,
feel terrible.
From that. But the kid did, you know, ended up doing okay. You also can get flesh-eating strep bacteria as a complication from chickenpox. So
that doesn't sound good at all.
I don't know what it is.
Anything that starts with flesh-eating, I don't want to get.
No, you don't. And so anyway, chickenpox really it can be deadly for some kids. Not often, but the potential's there, and it does happen.
Okay, I'm going to be the mom that read something on the internet. She probably is like 10 years old and didn't get right. But what about the people that argue that we don't really know what's going to happen to kids as adults? Because shingles is like the same family as chickenpox, right? And isn't it possible for adults to get worse cases of shingles because they didn't have chickenpox when they were little?
That's a good question. That's reasonable.
Well, you know what? Shingles is actually a reactivation of the chicken pox that you had as a kid.
What
ends up happening is that, okay, you get chicken pox or you get the vaccine, because the chicken pox vaccine is a live viral vaccine. So now you have a live chicken pox virus in your body, okay? Your immune system fights that off, but it doesn't completely kill it. And some of that chicken pox virus becomes dormant in the cell body of a nerve, and the immune system just sort of keeps it in check your whole life. And then if something happens that that makes your immune system not work quite as well, then that chickenpox virus from way back when you were a kid, now you're 50 years old, it comes back to life, and it travels down the nerve to the area of the skin that nerve goes to, and that's why you get this painful blistery kind of rash just in one patch, just in one area, because it's the area of skin that the nerve goes to where that chickenpox virus was still alive. And I have seen a few kids with shingles, older teenagers who did have the chickenpox vaccine as infants. So it is thought that the chickenpox vaccine, the virus from that, can still cause shingles. But we wouldn't expect it to be any more or less. You know, just it's going to happen from time to time.
Let's
so shingles is not a contagious disease. Now, if a person has shingles and the blisters pop open and somehow the virus that's inside aerosolizes and a kid breathes it in, they could get chickenpox from shingles. But it's really unlikely that you'll spread shingles.
I want to ask you a little bit about antibiotic use, because my wife will send me into the doctor, and she says, if you tell that doctor, if he doesn't give you an antibiotic, I'm going to come and see him. And my doctor will say, it would be tantamount to malpractice for me to give you an antibiotic. You don't need an antibiotic. I imagine parents do that to you all the time. Please, doctor, give us an antibiotic.
Yeah, but this, so often.
This
yeah,
has
very
become
often.
A problem, hasn't it?
I think with more and more MRSA or MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
That's the thing you get in the gym, right?
You can't.
Wait a minute. Now I'm scared. You get that in the gym?
No. I mean, if it's someone else in the gym has it, get it from them, I guess. But with more, I mean, the reason that that's out there is because of the overuse of antibiotics. And I think as there's more of that sort of thing out there, parents, at least in my practice, listen to the
advice. They're wise enough.
Yeah, they're wising up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. My wife hasn't wised up, but they're wising up.
And the issue is that bacteria are the only things you're going to kill with an antibiotic. You're not going to kill viruses with an antibiotic. And so much of human disease is caused by viruses. And all the antibiotic's going to do is kill off the normal good bacteria that live in your body and protect you. And so, you know, that's counterproductive, and you don't want to do that.
Well, I'm glad that the word's getting out on that. Another brother-in-law had a antibiotic-resistant sepsis, and it was terrible. He was on death's door. He almost died from it.
Right. It's a real problem. And again, it usually stems from just the overuse of antibiotics and when it's not appropriate to use them. Right. And so you develop these resistant strains of bacteria that it's becoming more and more difficult to treat.
Right.
So is there a way to tell if it's appropriate to use antibiotics or not? Or do you really need to go see your doctor and have them make the decision?
Got to go see your doctor and have them make the decision.
Well, there are countries. I think in Mexico, can't you in Mexico can't just get antibiotics over the counter? There are places. Maybe they've changed that.
Yeah, and I think you might be able to. they have much more lax drug control policies down there. But I still think, I mean, there's a reason that you go to medical school and you learn these things.
So. Well, I'm sure there's a reason you spend all that money on medical school.
I get a leaky pipe, I call the plumber.
Yeah,
you know?
He's a trained professional, as are you.
Right.
I know people who keep a jar of Cipro around. It became popular when we had those, botulinum infections or whatever it was. Anthrax.
Mm. Oh, right, around. Right, yeah.
Yeah, and then, but they just kept them around just in case. I got some Cipro. If I need some Cipro, I'm ready. I got it just in case. That seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, it is. It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to go back to vaccines for just a second because we have our live chat room going on, and I see a lot of people throwing around the word thimerosal and mercury and autism. So
okay.
I wanted
to. Sure. Well, first, let me say that most pediatricians, the vaccines that we use, have not had any mercury or thimerosal in them. For and it depends on the practice, but in our practice, it's been about 5 to 7 years now that we have not had any vaccines with mercury in them. The exception to that is the multi-dose flu vaccine that older kids get. So you have like a little bottle, it has 5 doses in it. You drop 1 dose at a time, and that still does have thimerosal in it.
So they took thimerosal out of vaccines, but they didn't think that was what was causing autism,
no,
correct?
And see, right, exactly. And the crazy thing with that is that when you take the thimerosal out, you shorten the shelf life of the vaccines considerably. And that's why now we have shortages of vaccines. Mm. And this happens in our practice quite often, where we won't have pneumococcal or Prevnar vaccine for a while, or we don't have the chickenpox vaccine for a while, or the Hib. There's a shortage of Hib vaccine now. So you decrease the shelf life because you take the preservative out. And the Hib, I don't know if you're familiar with this. There are two factories in the world that make the Hib vaccine. And which is it protects against Haemophilus influenza type B, which is a bacteria that causes meningitis in kids. And it's a deadly bacteria. And now there's a shortage of vaccines because one of the factories that makes it, they weren't putting the thimerosal in it, and their whole stock became contaminated with bacteria, and they had to throw it all away. Mm. So now there's a shortage of the Hib vaccine, and kids are at risk for developing bacterial meningitis because of this whole thimerosal issue, which, by the way, there has never been any documented proof that that the thimerosal causes anything. In fact, it was, I remember when it first came out, it was basically bean counters in Washington that figured out that the total amount of mercury that kids were exposed to in the first year of life was above what's recommended by not the FDA, what would it be? The
CDC?
Yeah, no, the environmental EPA.
EPA.
So yeah, so the EPA has, you know, what's an allowable amount of mercury exposure. And for a baby's body weight, it was slightly more than was recommended. However, that total amount was still less than can be found in one can of tuna fish.
Oh, great.
So,
oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just slightly more. And of course, you know, the way that comes out is we're poisoning our kids with mercury.
Right.
Of course, I remember I shouldn't say this, but I remember in college, my roommate had a little pill bottle of mercury. I'm sure, Leo, you played with mercury, right?
Oh, I
played with mercury as a child.
Okay. All right.
So. I can vividly remember going to the dentist, and the dentist would say, look what we're going to put in your teeth. And he poured out on the tray in front of me little mercury, and we were playing with it. Oh, isn't that cool?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine what was in me from that. That's terrible.
But see, now a thermometer cracks and you get one speck of mercury and the health department comes in and throws away your furniture and cuts out a big hole in the carpet. And I mean, it's just, okay, don't get me started.
So what somebody, William Naper, pointed out in our chat room that, well, look, we took thimerosal out. Did autism rates go down? No, they haven't gone down. So almost in a way that it's proved the opposite, as a matter of fact.
That, and that was going to be my next point. And it's a very, very good point. That if the mercury was taken out 5 years ago, we should have kids five and under. I mean, the autism rate should be much less, and it's not.
Right, right.
Now the MMR, because that's the next one, right? The yes. MMR vaccine. Is that I mean, the only study that has ever shown a connection was the one done in the late 80s, early 90s by Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And I mean, this is a guy who the kids that he was studying, their parents had organized themselves together to sue the vaccine manufacturer that made the MMR. And this doctor was on the payroll of the parents' lawyer. I mean, it was so outrageous that once this was all discovered, all of the other authors of the study, you know, recanted and said this was not right. There was a definite conflict of interest. There was, you know, it was very shaky whether the results were statistically significant. And since that study, there have been two much larger studies with basically what they did is they looked at a very large population of vaccinated kids, and then they went into some small towns in Europe where there's hardly any health care, very rural areas and no vaccinations at all. And they found a large population of unvaccinated kids and then looked at the autism rate between the two groups. Well, the kids in these that had been unvaccinated, none of them were diagnosed with autism because there was no health care. But once you went in and actually assessed their development and where they were, you know, mentally, they were shown to have the same autism rate in these large unvaccinated populations as is in the vaccinated populations. And that study has actually been done twice since the Wakefield study came out, and again showed no increased autism rates in large vaccinated groups compared to large unvaccinated groups.
On the one hand, you know, you want to say, trust your doctor, this is their job, they pay attention to this. On the other hand, you also want to say, hey, the internet's great because it's empowering patients to learn about conditions, to learn about treatments, to know more going in the door. And yet there are studies that prove one thing. There's studies that prove another thing. It's very hard for the lay person to judge those studies.
You have to find a site that you trust and someone who can analyze both studies that are out there. And that's what we do on PediaCast a lot of times. I'll have, like, good. For instance, I had a parent who I'm this kind of controversial, but I'm a big believer in the cry it out method for babies who won't go to sleep, because usually you let them cry it out three or four nights. It's done. They're going to sleep almost always. And I had a person write in and said, don't you know that Dr. Phil and Dr. Sears both say that crying it out causes brain damage? And they sent me a study that proved that crying it out causes brain damage. Well, I downloaded the study and actually read it. And it doesn't prove that at all. You know, it was not statistically significant. The only thing it showed was that kids who had post-traumatic stress disorder and they were seeing a psychiatrist because they had been abused as like 4 and 5 year old children had slightly smaller pituitary glands. I mean, and this is out there on the internet as proof that letting a baby cry it out causes brain damage. So I guess what I'm saying is you want to find someone who can analyze the data and be honest and truthful about it, you know, and just give you their opinion. That's what PediaCast is all about.
It's interesting that you mentioned the whole thing about crying it out, because that's another thing where there's fads, there's trends, there are people, you know, we did the Ferber method because it was very trendy when our, you know, our kids are 16 and 13 now, but when they were little, they cried it out. Certainly didn't damage their intelligence. Well, I don't know about my son.
And usually, you know, it works. How long did it take to work, Leo?
Well, you know, part of the problem was we broke our hearts, so we probably weren't as adamant. But it works. It works very well. It works within a few weeks. So if you really do it, you know.
I find most people 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. See, that's, yeah, because we stretch it out because we go, well, I can't take it any longer. I'm going to go in and cuddle the
baby. See, and then the baby learns, oh, if I cry long enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's like training a dog. I just have to remember that. It's like, it's animal training.
It is.
Yeah. Small human, animal.
human babies are animals.
I guess that's true.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you on again. This was fantastic.
Already in the chat room, they're saying, get this guy back. He's great. He really knows his stuff. It's really, you can see why people listen to the show. It's pediascribe.org/podcast for.
Oh yeah, if they go to pediacast.org, that'll get you there.
Oh, good, even better. I'll have to change your CG for the video.
Yeah, pediacast.org. Well, you know, it's auto directs and all that, because originally it was just a blog, and then I started the podcast. And if I'd been smart, I would have made it separate, but I did the slash thing, and I don't know.
Hey,
people can find it. pediacast.org.
If we'd have been smart, we'd have bought Apple at $3. That's smart.
That's right.
Dr. Mike, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining
us. Oh, sure. My pleasure. And I'd be glad to come back anytime.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Mike, isn't he? He's just, you know what? I love a guy who's just, in a calm, rational way, will explain his point of view.
Yeah.
I wish all doctors were like that. Actually, most of my experiences, many of them are. And nowadays, in this internet age, they know that this is important, that they need to have these conversations.
Right.
Because patients will come in saying, freaked out often, saying, hey, I just read it on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the explanation is what's really important. The first pediatrician we had, I remember asking him, is there, because this was 2003, and this was right after the study in The Lancet, which was, has since been disproven. And Marco has some cousins who have autism and really believed at that time that it was caused by vaccines. And so, I went and I said, can vaccines cause autism? And the pediatrician we saw was just like, ugh. Every woman asks me that.
Oh,
it wasn't like every man. It was every woman.
That is the wrong thing to say. Oh,
We found another pediatrician. Yeah.
Good.
So
every woman asks me that. I can't believe he said that.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it either. Yeah. So now it's time for the spend, save, give.
Yay. I love this portion of the show.
Let's talk about one way to spend our money, talk about one way to save our money, and talk about one way to give it away.
All right.
What do you want to start with?
Let's start with, wait a minute, let me think. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Spend.
Spend, you always choose that.
I always choose spend.
This is a really cool thing. It's the Insect Lore Butterfly Garden. Insectlore.com, I think you can get to it.
L-O-R-E.
L-O-R-E, yes. Now, I wish someone had told me that around age 5, kids will suddenly fall in love with bugs. Did your
they
kids
really
go crazy, bug crazy? Like Annabella
totally.
will be walking along and, she'll be doing her thing and I'm probably checking my email on my Centro and then she picks up and she's like, look, and opens her hand and it's just crawling with roly-poly bugs.
Isn't that cute? That's so sweet. And sometimes she'll put them in your bed just as a kid.
Yeah, it's great. No bugs in the house. That's our rule.
Abby, in fact, I told you and Annabella this story as you were off to kindergarten or preschool. Abby found a caterpillar and they brought it to the preschool and the butterfly and the whole thing. That's that age.
Right.
Where you kind of go, wow.
Yeah.
But you know what? We should remember that. That is still a wow.
Yeah.
This little furry thing.
I know.
It goes, it makes this little thing,
and
it lies
up
there, and it turns into a butterfly?
It is amazing. It is amazing. And in case you can't find your own caterpillar, you can buy some. Annabella got this for her birthday. It was a little certificate that for live caterpillars, and then you mail them in when you're ready, and they come back with their own food, and they come in this tiny little Tupperware type thing with their food, and you watch the caterpillars crawl around for a few days, and then they make their cocoons, and you take, they're like stuck on this piece of paper, and you take the piece of paper out, and you put it in this little butterfly garden, and then you wait 7 to 10 days, and then they turn into butterflies. And then you let them go. You can feed them sugar water, and then you let them go. So the butterfly garden, I think, is about $19.99. But Insect Lore also has larvae for ladybugs, and you can watch them shed their skin and turn into real ladybugs and other bugs.
So who runs this place?
I don't know. I mean, it's Insect Lore. It's a company.
It's just a place.
Yeah.
So it's more.
But I've tried it.
It's more than lore.
It's more than lore. It's real insects.
It's more than
I've
just
had
lore.
These insects. We're going to do the butterflies
insects
next.
That you buy. It's more like an insect store.
Yes, it is.
Insect lore.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever buy ladybugs for your, you know how you do ladybugs for your garden and you buy thousands of them and you'll be...
Yeah, we don't really need to buy them. My kids can spot them. We catch like 10
ladybugs
a day. This is ladybug season too.
Is it really? Ladybugs are the greatest thing. Do you still do the ladybug, fly away home, your house is on fire, your children are scarred for life? Do you do that one?
No, we don't sing that song. No.
Mm-mm. I was scarred for life. By
yeah.
That
maybe
song.
That, yeah, you don't need to worry about the cry it out, the ladybug thing.
That was like terrifying. You know, that's what's good. Times change. People get sensitized. They no longer say things like
that. We still do the break your mom, step on a crack, break your mama's back, too, which is also insane. And we talked in the, about last year about good night, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite.
You know, Jennifer's of the strong opinion that that was one of the reasons our kids had a hard time sleeping at
the
night,
is
that we
bite.
Scared them with the bed bugs thing. And by the way, bed bugs are back.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have a right to be scared.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you know, you're getting them.
Right.
You're getting them.
So we'll put
you
the link to...
You know why that is?
Why?
DDT's gone. We need DDT back. Screw the birds. I want DDT.
Excellent. That's, it's because of thimerosal, I think, actually.
I'm going to start a site, ddtlore.com.
You want thimerosal back and DDT.
Yeah. All right. This is Save.
Save is junglecrazy.com.
It's insane!
This is all the crazy Amazon deals in one place.
Oh, so it's not an official Amazon site.
No, it just takes it just somehow scours Amazon for all the deals. So that's how I saved $96
what?
On a 3 gigabyte memory chip. For
my
Sentra.
It's not just kid stuff.
No, it was $119. It was regularly priced $119. And
this is cool. So you go there? Do you go here like every day? This is like the gold box that Amazon did for a while. I guess they still do
gold box,
but it's not as cool as it used to be.
No, it's where you just click and get like a crazy.
It was crazy. It was insane. Just,
it was exciting because it was a little box you were going to open up.
You never knew what you would get.
Yeah, a lot of these deals. I mean, they're great, but like, you know, who would pay $119 for a 2 gig?
Well, look at this one. This is really cool. This is a LG phone for a penny.
For a penny. There's a lot of those weird things. I don't know what the story is. It's probably not the phone.
A 13-function
Swiss
Army knife.
Click it and see what's the LG phone for a penny.
Well, you know, you got to sign up for the rest of your life for some silly, you know.
You don't even want to click it. You're scared even to click that, aren't you?
It's
going to
be one of those things. Well, I might actually buy it. This is my problem.
Yeah.
You know, Amazon is brilliant because they do that. Boy, they're so well marketed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading this book on Audible and all.
Practically Illogical or?
Irrationally. Predictably Irrational.
I'm Practically Illogical.
You're Practically Illogical. It's the same exact.
Predictably Irrational
by Dan Ariely. And one of the things that Amazon is doing that is he totally talks about, it's about marketing. Ploys, basically, is that this Amazon Prime thing sucks you in because you pay them $75 so that you can have free 2-day shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that as a result, they're going to get, you know, twice as many purchases.
Yeah, you're going to buy everything from them. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it is, you know what, it is a penny.
Mm-hmm. It is.
When purchased with new service plan from Verizon.
Oh, that's the kind of free phone sort of thing.
Do you know how much this is the same phone I got for Henry. He broke like almost instantly.
Really?
I don't even want to tell you what I paid for this phone.
Did you pay $449?
Because
that's the
like
list price.
That.
Oh,
he
but so you get the plan.
Now. He needs a new, maybe I'll get him another chocolate, and this time it'll be free. Except we're already, unfortunately, a Verizon customer.
JungleCrazy.com.
It's insane. Show at least 70% discounted. No returns. Call your lawyer.
Okay, now to the
Wait
give.
A minute, there's a 1 cent bin.
Ooh, 1 cent
now,
bin.
I like this idea. So everything in here.
I'm going to teach you. My goal for this year is to teach you to be a bargain shopper, Leo Laporte.
I'm not a bargain shopper.
No.
I pay full retail for everything.
Yes.
Unless I buy it on eBay, then I pay full retail and they send me the product, which is a really good deal.
What did you buy on eBay that they didn't send you?
See these cameras that we've got here?
Uh-huh, you bought them on eBay?
I bought one. No, these.
They are here.
I bought them for real. And then, you know, and then I bought one. See, I don't know if I have a shot. You can see the cameras. But I bought one on eBay, and the son of a gun, you know, hasn't. I sent him $2,000. He hasn't sent me a camera yet.
Oh.
Isn't that terrible?
That is terrible. Does he know that you're the highest, you have the most followers on Twitter than anyone else in the world?
I'm going to send 40,000 members of the Twit Army against him.
JungleCrazy.com.
That's
I had one more
save,
thing to say.
And now
about,
we have a. Oh, you have another save?
Well, no, I had something else. Oh,
is it double
I
save
can't,
time?
No, no.
That's
oh, the cameras.
Crazy.
The cameras. That's what we were talking about.
Yes,
the cameras. You can watch us at twitlive.tv.
We should mention
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we should mention
everybody
that.
Everybody probably wants to know. So if you listen to this podcast and you'd like to spoil your supper, it's very easy to do. All you have to do is go to twitlive.tv, and you can see us. We tape on Thursdays at 1:30 Pacific, which is 4:30 Eastern, which is 2,030 hours UTC.
Excellent.
And you can, so you can watch, and then we have a chat room, and we watch people say nasty things to us, and we respond back. Why I oughta? No, people give us feedback. Like, we got questions for
right. Like, someone's looking for that eBay ID to chase that person down.
Yeah, I'm not giving that out because I don't want to get sued.
Yeah, no.
I'll get sued. That's the first thing I'll have.
Yes.
I'll tell people, go attack this guy.
Okay, now let's get to the give. Have you heard of the Fresh Air Fund?
Everybody who ever lived in New York has heard of
the Fresh Air Fund. Yeah, I lived in New York.
It's not only New York?
I think it's still on the East Coast, but you can donate it to it no matter where you live. That's why this is the gift.
I like the Fresh Air
Fund. But the Fresh Air Fund takes inner city kids and gives them a summer vacation. So
yes.
I actually learned about this from the Mac Mommy at the macmommy.blogspot.com.
I follow her on Twitter. I love the
you
Mac
do?
Mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's adorable.
I posted something about Annabella was exhibiting what I consider to be racist behavior.
Oh dear, what was she doing?
I think it's normal for every like 4.5-year-old, but she's just experimenting with, well, this is this color and this is that color, and you know, she was just saying like,
you know, our
well,
president
I don't
is going to be an African American.
Well, I hope so, but she was
either
just saying,
or he'll be a 78-year-old vet. There's your choice.
Annabella doesn't use the term African American. It's just, you know, she was
doesn't?
Just. She, I think she just noticed.
What does she call him?
Well, she doesn't
say,
really
she doesn't say like, you know, something.
No, she doesn't need to call them anything. I think it takes to age about 4 or 5 to even notice that people have skin color different than yours. But
she's
just saying things like, well, that person has dark skin. I'm not going
to
be friends with people with dark skin.
Oh, that's
only with pink
really?
Skin like me. It's like this tribal mentality.
Really,
so yeah. So, you know, we had a good talk about it. But the Mac Mommy suggested kind of, you know, in jest, but was saying that you should, you know, do what my parents did, which was the Fresh Air Fund, and hosted a child.
Oh, so they
in
can
there.
Come and live with you.
Yes. They live with you for the summer.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think it's just on the East Coast. But
New York Times does a big thing with the Fresh Air.
Yeah, so it's freshair.org, and you can check it out and donate, be a host family.
Henry, you know, it's Henry. Henry was, when he was really little, I'm more talking 4 or 5.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, it's...
And we live, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, we live in a town where there are not a lot, they're Hispanics, but they're not a lot of African-Americans.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, although one of his best friends now is black.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, I don't think he'd seen a lot of them. But every time he'd see a black guy, he'd say, oh, he's buff. I think he thought, I don't know, I think he conflated the two.
Yeah.
So he would always say, oh, buff. And after a while, it kind of became embarrassing because he'd walk up to him and he'd say, you're buff. It's like, no. Henry, don't say that anymore.
Yeah.
But kids are funny. But the thing is, and I think this is why Fresh Air Fund's a good idea,
mm-hmm.
it all comes from ignorance.
Right, it does.
If you, I mean, I grew up with my two best friends were Scotty and David. And they were black, and I just loved them. And if you grew up with these guys, you're not going to say it. You're not going to think.
Right. And Annabella wasn't, I mean, she wasn't saying anything. You know, she just was, that was, and I was.
She didn't know.
I got
I
a lot of
So Mac Mommy, good suggestion.
Yeah, the Fresh Air Fund. So are you ready for our Audible pick?
I am. I know, you know, I noticed something.
What did you notice?
Pediacast is, advertiser is.
AudibleKids.com. Audible Kids.
See,
yeah, Audible Kids is our sponsor also.
They know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
AudibleKids.com. We love AudibleKids.com.
We do. Do you want to tell everyone about Audible Kids?
So
or
the
do
deal
you
with Audible,
tell?
And we, you know, we've talked about Audible many, many times before. I mean, the deal with Audible is it's audio books, right? And if you go to Audible.com, they have 45,000 titles. And they have kids books on Audible.com. But the thing about Audible Kids, and I'm going to pull it up right now, the thing about Audible Kids that is so very cool is it's a site just for kids and their parents. Let me just show you. This is the Audible Kids site. And they have a lot of help for parents finding books. They have, you see these buttons, discover, listen, share. You see the recommendations, Corduroy by Don Freeman. Wasn't Corduroy? Is it Corduroy? William Steig's Original Shrek. You know kids are going to...
We got that.
Yeah,
I love listening
love
to that.
This. So this is the place to go if you're interested in getting audiobooks for your kids. Get them started young. because the younger they start audiobooks, the sooner they'll become Twit listeners. Something like that. Do you have a recommendation?
I do. It's Owl Moon by Jane Yolen.
Wait a minute. I don't know if I know that. Owl Moon.
It's read by the author. You should play a little bit.
Really?
Any minute now, I think Jeremiah McNichols is going to be calling in. But while we're waiting, we should play a little bit of... Do you have the technology to play a little bit of Owl Moon by Jane Yolen?
Do I have the technology?
It's about a little girl who goes owling with her father.
Oh,
and
what is owling? They're not trying to capture owls.
No. Just listen to them.
All right, let's listen to a little bit of Owl Moon.
Owl Moon.
Owl.
Isn't that lovely music?
Owl.
This is good to fall asleep to, I'm telling you.
It was late one winter night, long past my bedtime, when Pa and I went owling. There was no wind. The trees stood still as giant statues. And the moon was so bright, the sky seemed to shine.
Why do I know Jane Yolen? I know her name.
She, I think, also wrote a book that you gave to us, Time for Bed.
Time for bed.
Little mouse. Little darkness mouse, is little falling mouse. All over the house.
I'm sorry. You paused. You gave me that opening.
I did.
He's going to say house. Yeah. I just stop talking right now. And you were right.
So Jane Yolen is a great author. And this is a good, you know, if your kids need something to listen to as they fall asleep, I love Owl Moon.
You know what's cool? And we can do this right now for you, just for you. You are listeners, people who are listening to this show right now. We have a special deal for you. If you go to audiblekids.com/monkeys, you can sign up for audible.com and get a credit toward a free book. And there are so many great books. Listen and learn together with your kids. You know, you maybe already know about Audible and Audible books. Certainly, if you listen to our podcasts, you must know by now. But you can also turn your kids on to reading by listening. And Meg and I have both talked about this several times. It doesn't discourage them from reading real books. In fact, far from it. It gets them excited about reading. It makes them want to read more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great way to give you a little bit of a break, let's face it. They listen to these books and they put some right out. highly recommended. AudibleKids.com. We're so glad that they're a supporter of Jumping Monkeys, and we thank them so much for their support. AudibleKids.com/monkeys. So we're waiting for Jeremiah McNichol. Yes, is that right?
I'm here. I've been waiting quietly in the wings for a few seconds now.
Wow, that's impressive. He just appeared.
Bibbidi bobbidi boo.
Wow. Hi, Jeremiah.
Hi. Don't you have a little light or something that goes on?
No, it doesn't. The phone doesn't ring. Nothing. You just appear out of nowhere.
I wanted to jump in and say, I don't know if you said it because I switched off my audio while I was calling, and now I'm just listening to you through the phone, but Jane Yolen is also the author of all the How Do Dinosaurs Do XYZ books, like Eat Their Food, Go to Bed.
Oh, that's neat.
Maybe that's right. Maybe she isn't the Time for Bed author.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yes, How Do Dinosaurs Go to Sleep? We love that one.
That's how we know them in our household, especially the How Do Dinosaurs Eat Their Food. It's pretty funny. You know, you have these basically domestic scenes, but with, you know, the parents trying to spoon feed a pterodactyl or something, you know, instead of a baby. It's pretty.
That's great.
So today, Jeremiah, you're going to tell us about water bottles for kids, safe water bottles for kids.
We should say Jeremiah is the author of Z-Rex. At Z-Rex, Z-R-E-C-S .blogspot.com, which is a great site with recommendations. And in fact, you also put layer links of your discussions up on your site there.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
you are a geek dad.
Yeah, yeah. And they love this program, by the way, and they've actually started doing live streaming of their podcasting as well.
Oh, neat.
Independently, but I mentioned that you guys were doing it, and they said, oh, we'll have to check out what Twit's doing. You know,
that's neat. Yeah, we're all doing the same. We have all the same ideas.
Noelle, it's a great system. It's exciting. So.
Yeah, it's fun.
So a few weeks ago, you told us about the studies that...
I actually have Z here with me, and she might interject a few comments. And say hi.
Hi, Z. Oh, that's so cute. Tell us again how old Z is.
You want to tell him how old you are? Yeah, we'll tell him. How old are you?
Three.
Three,
and already an accomplished podcaster. Do you have a website, Z?
You have a blog?
Yeah.
Oh boy, do you like doing it?
Yeah.
Oh, she's so cute.
Yeah, she doesn't know what a website is. But
she knows what a blog is. Well, she's very modern.
Blog is. Oh yeah.
She's
most of the time
modern.
If she walks up to us and we're on the computer, she says, "What you blogging about?"
What you blogging about, Willis? You're kidding.
Oh no.
That's funny. That's
anyway, funny. We have. Well, she's very actively engaged with Play-Doh, but we also have 7 sippy cups sitting in front of us. Actually, sippy or straw cups. Because once you get to about 3, if your kid's not aggressively trying to dump their water upside down or their drink upside down, you can consider straw cups, which are great for helping them with language development and in some ways, you know, sort of a step up from a sippy. But the we have here products that are all BPA-free from Munchkin, Think Baby, Clean Canteen, Nalgene, Thermos, and Sig. And we have a few favorites. I have a couple favorites for parental reasons, and she has a couple favorites for 3-year-old reasons. And we can either tell you what's great and what's not, or we can just give you the highlights.
We should mention this BPA issue, because we talked about this once before. This is the chemical that you're finding now in a lot of plastics. And it's a a male hormone analog or something?
It's estrogen, actually.
Estrogen.
It mimics estrogen, and so it can have reproductive effects, developmental effects. They're really concerned about it in fetal development, and then also in infants. But you know, basically, the younger the subject, the more dramatic the effects they see, and they link. A lot of scientists now are saying that there's probably a relationship between exposure to BPA as a fetus, as an infant, as a toddler, and things like cancer 40 years later.
Wow. So as usual, it's the kids that get hurt the hardest by this kind of stuff because they're developing and this stuff gets in their bloodstream.
Yeah.
So it makes sense you'd want a BPA-free sippy cup.
Yeah, so BPA-free generally just means that it's not made of polycarbonate plastic, which is the super hard, clear plastic.
The stuff in Nalgene bottles. Yeah, that's great.
But Nalgene has basically abandoned polycarbonate themselves. So they're using a plastic called Triton now, and they have a new version of their Grip and Gulp sippy cup, which is a 16-ounce sippy with that's made out of this new Triton material. And it's about $10 and it's a decent sippy. It's pretty slow flowing, which is kind of out of keeping with its size. It's a little bit large for a really little kid, and it's a little bit slow releasing for an older kid. So it's not really our favorite, but it is BPA free, and so they're basically marketing it to the same people who would have bought their older version, which was polycarbonate.
Right.
That's real new on the market.
So which one is your favorite?
Really love. New. Well, one of them's a new sippy, and one of them has been around for quite a while, and just so happens to be BPA free. The new one is by a company called Think Baby, which basically came into being to produce BPA free bottles and now sippy cups, and they basically have a bottle body that accepts a lid that's either fitted with a one of several infant nipples, like a bottle, or you can use a handle and that, like an O-ring with a couple handles on it, and a sippy top with it. So you can use the same bottle for your kid and just buy the additional top component when you upgrade from a bottle to a sippy. So they're very environmentally focused, and that's one way that they try to reduce the amount of consumption you have to do to use these products, and their sippy is great. It leaks a little bit, and basically, I would argue that the idea of a totally leak-proof sippy cup is basically not possible. I mean, we haven't found a single sippy cup that is actually totally leak-free. But basically, you know, you just you just you know, work with your kids to not dump over their drink, and you want one that's not going to go gushing out, you know, but leaks very slowly. And really, the main problem with leaking isn't the kid; it's the parent. If the parent is, you know, throwing the sippy cup in a diaper bag and expecting that they can throw it any which way, then if they have one that leaks slowly, then it's going to leak in their diaper bag, basically. But the Think Baby Sippy is a really nice option, and it's also about $10. I think it's $9. But again, that's the same bottle you could have been using for your baby, and then you just buy a few bucks worth of extra pieces and have a sippy cup out of it. One that is one of Z's favorite sippies, and I'm not even exactly sure why, but it's really one of her favorites, so I have to be fair to her and admit to it. It's a Munchkin. They have it's called a Cupsicle, and it's just a thick-walled plastic, quote-unquote insulated, I don't know what it's insulated with, sippy that has, it's really a big tank-like plastic sippy cup, which we've used since she was, I don't know, since she first started using sippies, and eventually she got big enough that we took the little valve out that's inside so that it would flow faster, and it's still one of her favorite sippy cups. And so she's really a big fan of what Munchkin is doing with their sippy cup technology. We also have a Sig, which a lot of people really like because they're very cute. They don't have a proper sippy top. Sigs are made out of aluminum, so they don't keep stuff as cold as long as stainless steel.
I have one of those, and Megan's showing off hers right now. It's
yeah,
quite beautiful.
Yeah, well, I like the Sig, but you didn't give it a very good review in your adult water bottle review either.
Well, mostly because it's kind of a catch-22. They're really attractive looking, but if you're concerned at all about durability, you have to buy this cover-like sleeve that you can put over it, which hides the cool design that you might have bought it for.
Well, what? Why? Because it might scratch or something, or what?
They dent really easily. They scratch pretty easily. The powder coat paint that they have on them, you know, like they're really graphically oriented, so they're really cool, you know, looking. And I have one, and I like it. Some people also don't like them because they have a real narrow top, so it's like hard to dump ice in them.
That's true.
And they're also they can be a little bit harder to clean. Our main complaint with the sippy, with the small one, is since they don't have a sippy lid, you buy this twisty sport top. That's the best thing you can use from Sig for a toddler, and it's really hard to twist for a little kid. Z just proved to me that she was able to do it now after concerted effort, and she's almost four, and this is the first time I've seen her be able to untwist it. So, you know, having to open the sippy cup for your child is not really an ideal situation. You know, you want them to be able to sort of manage it themselves, at least I do. So it'd be nicer if they made a true sippy lid. Like Clean Canteen, they just arranged with Avent to use their lid. So they don't make their own lid, but their smallest stainless steel bottle is compatible. It works with Avent lids. So, you know, they figured out a way to do it. And we think Sig would be wise to offer that as well, because we find tons of interest in their smaller bottles for kids because of that visual appeal and because they're not made of plastic.
That's
one way that they could probably do a lot better.
Well, thanks, Jeremiah. Thanks again for coming on. Jeremiah, of course, is at Z Recommends, ZRex.com.
ZRex. And thanks to Z for stopping by, too.
You want to say bye-bye to them? Say goodbye.
Bye!
Bye, Z!
Bye!
Bye! Good to see you. Take care.
Bye. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you, Jeremiah. Bye.
All right.
ZRex.com. That's a good place to go.
And he also has a site, Gardenaut.
Is that his site?
Yeah.
Because this review of
the
water bottles appeared as
Gardenaut.
N-A-U-T. Yeah.
Like astronaut.
Adventures and then, in the Garden and Beyond.
Mm-hmm. And then prizey.net, of course.
He's like sites, more sites, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing it all the time. It's good. This is cool. Water Bottle Showdown. And you know what's neat about him? He put a lot of effort into that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really went crazy with this thing. I mean, he takes his stuff seriously.
He does, yeah.
He don't mess around.
No, uh-uh.
All right, what do we get? What, have we done Spend, Save, Give?
We did. We have just the listener feedback. Do we have time for that?
Yeah. Do I have time for listener feedback? That's what I'm all about.
Okay.
Listener feedback is what I'm all about.
All right. Well, this is the time where we hear from you guys. I have an email. I have a few emails, actually.
Well, I also have a call from our grand central number.
You do?
Yes. I mean, we're set.
Okay. My first email, what?
If people want to email you.
Yeah, megan@twit.tv.
Right.
That's how you reach the show. Don't even try to email Leo. He's too busy.
No, I don't want to see it.
This is from Carl Vredenberg. He says, I am the father of four, with 7 and 10-year-old boys, a 15-year-old girl, and a boy of 18.
Holy.
With that range in age, I appreciate the parenting advice dealing with younger kids as well as teenagers. Like so many others who call and write in, I listen to all of the podcasts on Leo's Twit Network.
All right.
Love them all. In fact, I consider Leo my mentor when it comes to podcasting.
All right.
I've delivered webcasts for some years as part of my job at IBM. I've also been podcasting, and more recently, external to IBM, as well as via my personal UX DesignCast podcast series, available via carlvredenberg.podbean.com. I'll put the link in the show notes and iTunes.
Yeah, munchcast.com is our website, and you go there and you got everything. I'm sorry, Jumping Monkeys. But don't go to munchcast.com. There's nothing there for you. At Munchcast, there's nothing.
We're all there. Women are all the same. I can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Y'all look alike to me.
One of the real lifelong, this is still the email from Carl. One of the real lifelong passions, his real lifelong passions is mentoring. And he says, I've started a podcast series called Life Habits and recently devoted an episode to authentic parenting. Your listeners may be interested in that episode as well as the others. It's available at lifehabits.podbean.com and via iTunes.
That's really neat.
Do you want me to read another email, or
no,
would you
I'll
like
play
to?
One. I've got one from Birmingham, Alabama. It's 26 seconds long. That means we have no idea what's going to happen on this. Let's just listen, you and me together.
Okay.
It's really awful. We'll just edit it out. If you're hearing this, it wasn't really awful.
Hi, I'm Joe Paul from Birmingham, Alabama. I just wanted to say I miss watching both of you from Call for Help and the Screensavers.
Yep.
I've learned a lot from y'all too, and I wish y'all could get back on TV in the U.S.
We're kind of on TV in the U.S.
Y'all have a good day. Thanks.
Aww. Hey, thanks for the very kind words. Megan and I were on the Screensavers together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I know Megan, and now we're doing this Twit Live, so you can actually watch the broadcast, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
Twitlive.tv.
Mm-hmm. I have an email from Sana from Denmark. She says, I come from Finland, and my husband is Danish. We both speak our native languages to our son.
Which would be Finnish and Danish.
Would you have any tech tips, or how could I boost his adoption of the Finnish language? As we live in Denmark, Danish is naturally the prevalent language in his daily life.
I have no suggestions for
that. There was something that you recommended. It was a site where you could actually speak to a native speaker, and they would...
Oh, yeah.
Sorry to spring this one on you.
Yeah. What was the name of that? Well, there's I know one for Spanish.
Oh, but they don't have other languages. Oh, Paralingua.
Yeah, but there, I think there is a Skype, a situation where you can speak to native speakers over Skype. Now, I haven't used it, but let me just see if. I mean, that's certainly a way that, you know, if you made some friends in Finland and you had your kids call them in Finland,
right.
That would work out very well.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who knows the answer to that, I would love to get some.
Yeah, so
that. That'd be really
call cool. us and let us know if you have tech tips. Our number is 707-981-4602, or you can email me at megan@twit.tv.
Yes, you can.
For And I have one more email from Dave from Orange County.
Dave from Orange County.
He says, I'm a 41-year-old dad raising a 6-year-old boy and an 8-month-old daughter. I've been listening to Leo's Netcast for a year or two, and Jumping Monkeys has quickly become my favorite weekly hour of listening.
Isn't that nice?
Try to keep it to an hour. I can't say that there's been anything more rewarding and more tiring than raising two kids. My wife and I recently bought my son a see-through piggy bank with 3 slots labeled for spend, save, and invest.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's really good.
So your weekly spend, save, give.
Wait a minute. Spend, save, and?
Invest.
Isn't that the same as saving?
He must mean give.
He means give.
Yeah.
Because you want to make sure the charitable.
Well, maybe he's saving it for himself and one is investing to, like, for college or something.
Maybe that's
one
it.
Is saving.
Oh, it could be that kind
I don't
of
know.
Thing. Yeah.
Write us again, Dave, and let us know. In addition, we were just discussing whether we could get a Nintendo Wii, knowing that it's Dad that really wants it, but my 6-year-old son who would want to use it as much, if not more, than Dad. I think we may have won her over after she finally saw it and when we played with it at a friend's house. It's not a first-person shooter like Grand Theft Auto, so I think there's nothing wrong with the Wii. What do you think?
I think there's nothing wrong with any game machine, but that's just what I think. I mean, I think for littler kids, the Wii's probably okay choice.
Yeah.
My concern about video games is not so much the content, although I guess that's some of it. I mean, you certainly don't want a 6-year-old playing Grand Theft Auto,
mm-hmm.
but it's more the fact that they're so addictive and kids can spend so much time
mm-hmm.
Playing these video games that they don't do their homework, they don't participate in life. Most, it's like anything else. Most kids are fine. They'll play. In fact, if you don't do anything, they'll play it till they get sick of it, and then they'll stop and they'll have a real life.
Mm-hmm.
But some kids, and this is where you have to worry, some kids get like addicted.
Right.
And they can't stop. And that's a real problem.
Well, that's all I've got this week.
Throw it on the table, why don't you?
Here.
Go, just throw it. That's it. She just tossed the whole show away.
Now you get to watch me pick it up after we're done.
That's another reason why you want to watch Two Fly.
Yeah.
So we thank you so much for being here. Great to talk to Dr. Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremiah, always a pleasure. And thank you, Megan Maroney. We'll be back next week.
Yes, next week.
Another
we will.
Show.
Yep, next week
you're
we'll
gonna
be.
Back for, you're going somewhere. You're going
I'm going
to Cape Cod.
So
you'll be back tanned, rested, and
I'll
ready.
Be back tanned, rested, and ready, and we'll be talking about birthday parties, kids' birthday parties, cool. And we'll also be talking to a science fiction author.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Ridley Pearson.
Ridley Pearson?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's kids' science fiction.
Young adult science
cool.
fiction.
That's
so.
Really cool. I can't wait to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what's coming up.
Yeah. We're trying to get an interview. Audible has offered us an interview with Orson Scott Card, who wrote Ender's Game, and my kids love him as a science fiction author.
Excellent.
So he's a wonderful science fiction author.
Yeah.
So we're trying to get him in.
Yeah.
The show. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Our politics don't agree, though. But we won't talk politics.
No.
He's a little more conservative, though.
He's Mormon, right?
You know what? I think he might be.
Yeah.
And that would actually inform his politics maybe more than I had considered.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's a very smart and a very ethical person.
Yeah.
We'll talk about books.
All righty.
All right, Megan, you just can get up and leave. Just walk on out of here, and I'm going to get to work. We'll edit this down. We'll make a fabulous podcast out of this. I thank you so much for joining us. Don't throw your mic, please.
Okay, I won't.
We'll see you next time on...
Jumping Monkeys.
Bye-bye.